The Perils of Living an Ethical Life. Jamie Struthers is our speaker today. Many of you know him, but for those who don't, Jamie is a lifelong Unitarian who grew up at the Unitarian Fellowship of Regina since before he could walk. He's been a practicing lawyer in Saskatchewan for the past 39 years, the last 29 years in poverty law as director of Legal Aid Saskatchewan. He has done ongoing studies in theology. Today, Jamie will give us a personal look at the sixth principle, the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all.
Good morning. And again, I've titled my presentation for this morning, Dealing with the Perils of Living an Ethical Life, or subtitled, Wrestling with Koheleth, Best Two of Three Falls. It's been a year and a half or so since I last spoke to you on the subjects raised in the book of Ecclesiastes, and the story of its central character, Koheleth, wrestling with the meaning of life. On the last occasion, I focused on the struggles of the character to find real meaning in life. He, having seemingly found material success to be generally unfulfilling, and as he described as hevel, simply air or vapor. The thesis which arose from that examination led generally to a suggestion that each of us, in our search for truth, are bound to take our own paths, and that some paths will be difficult, and the conclusions may not always be comfortable. In simple terms, the solution of the author of Ecclesiastes was to eat, drink, and generally live well. Today I intend to focus narrowly on the author's assertions, generally in chapter 8, 2-9, and pose some questions about the advice that the author gives in those passages. I will attempt to examine the rather cautious approach taken by this author to confronting civil or potentially other holders of power and or structures of power through a few separate lenses, and for our purposes particularly, the lens of our sixth principle of current Unitarian Universalism. Although I do have some opinions, which I'll express concerning the central question, which I will pose to you this morning, I do not profess any definitive answers or truths, and will consider the day a success if some debate is triggered and if some introspection is provoked in those hearing my words today. The sixth principle specifically implores congregations such as ours to affirm and promote the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. It is my submission that a clear implication or interpretation of this principle requires more than passive support for this cause, and that some action external to the congregation would almost certainly be necessary to give fulsome support of this principle. This type of action is envisaged by this principle and would involve, in modern parlance, speaking truth to power. In Ecclesiastes 8, 2-9, the writer advised a very cautious approach to dealing with civil authorities, which he describes as the king. When matters become contentious, he says specifically, and I quote, "Keep the king's command because of your sacred oath. Do not be terrified. Go from his presence. Do not delay when the matter is unpleasant, for he does whatever he pleases. For the word of the king is powerful, and who can say to him, 'What are you doing?' Whoever obeys a command will meet no harm, and the wise mind will know the time and way, though the troubles of mortals lie heavy upon them. Indeed, they do not know what is to be, for who can tell them how it will be? No one has power over the wind to restrain the wind, or power over the day of death. There is no discharge from the battle, nor does wickedness deliver those who practice it. All this I observed, applying my mind to all that is done under the sun, while one person exercises authority over another to the other's hurt. To be clear, I'm not sure that I can quibble with all of the logic of the passage above, in that if one is concerned either solely or primarily about one's own preservation, or at least interest, the advice given seems to be entirely sound. Clearly challenging despots, one may say poking the bear, carries an element of potentially significant risk. By way of interest, another rather direct warning is found at Proverbs 25, 21 and 2, wherein the writer implores the reader, "My child, fear the Lord and the king, and do not disobey either one of them, for disaster comes from them suddenly, and who knows the ruin that both can bring." It would certainly seem to me that both ancient authors have struck upon a rather common sense approach for dealing those in positions of power, one of which will allow the adherent to continue to eat, drink, and live the good life without being bothered, or worse, by pesky monarchs. The problem inherent in the approach advocated generally is that for a social activist, and again contemplated by the sixth principle, a strict interpretation and adaptation or adoption of this passage into practice would effectively silence the social activist. It might be argued that prayer and hoping and wishing would exclusively replace outspoken action and critical public commentary on any number of issues. This is not to diminish the power of prayer for those whom its practice is important. To remain silent or to speak only when one's publicly expressed opinions align with those in power would, I think, be a bitter pill indeed for any social activist. Further, in my submission, the tradition of social activism in modern Unitarian Universalism, underpinned to a great extent by the sixth principle, would be offended, dare I say, wounded to the core, by a notion that it might not be acceptable to be entirely passive in the face of perceived social injustice. I think that it is also significant to note how the wise advice given in Ecclesiastes 10:2-9 can be contrasted with the gospel stories of the New Testament, wherein it is written that Jesus, in his work among the most marginalized and impoverished of society of the day, and others, and his criticism of both civil and ecclesiastical authorities, is nothing if not blunt and bold. The stories are clear that his activism is what leads to his execution as an activist and as a young man. For this approach, he received little, if any, commentary critical of his approach by authors relating his works and deeds, apart either entirely or at least partially from his status as the Messiah in Christian theology. He is revered for his activism and commitment to the advancement of social justice in the society of his day. History is replete with accounts of those social activists who have fallen afoul of the powerful and suffered greatly, sometimes death as a result. In many circles, these persons are seen as martyrs to their respective causes, and I would submit, are seldom criticized for the unfortunate outcome to themselves. Examples of such persons in the last 100 years or so would include several civil rights activists. The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King was clearly assassinated in April 1968 as a result of his civil rights work. Similarly, the Reverend James Reeb, a Unitarian Universalist minister, was murdered in March of 1965 as a result of his participation in the civil rights movement of the mid-1960s. Another activist of that movement, John Lewis, was arrested so many times engaging in nonviolent civil disobedience that he adopted the credo, "Get in trouble, good trouble, necessary trouble." Recent pro-democracy activists jailed as a result of their activities include Nelson Mandela, who spent 28 years locked up as a result of his activism. Russian democracy activist Alexander Navalny remains in custody to date. In most circles, each of these persons and their accomplishments are generally seen as very worthwhile, and that their personal sacrifices were and are worthy of praise. It does somewhat beg the question, what if these individuals had strictly followed the advice contained in Ecclesiastes 8:2-9? So now, if we're to transport all of these examples to North America in 2023, we might say, but really, what danger is there in activism in this time and place anyway? To be fair, it seems unlikely that death will result from unpopular opinions expressed in Canada in 2023. Well, being drummed out of the civil service has proven to be one possibility, however, as exemplified by the case of Tony Turner in 2015. It should also be noted that a leading contender for the United States presidency in 2024 has been musing on the early campaign trail that he might attempt to prosecute political opponents. As in the case of Mr. Navalny, however, it is clear that defying civil authorities in some parts of the world, even today, can have life-threatening consequences. To review, and to be fair, it seems that the writer of Ecclesiastes may leave the door open just a crack to the activist to challenge the king, especially where it's written, and again, from 8:5-6, whoever obeys a command will meet no harm, and I add emphasis, and the wise mind will know the time and way. For every matter has its time and way. So, does this suggest that some criticism of the king is possible if the person is smart about it, or maybe waits until the right moment to raise an issue? Is that a way to get to one's point across, yet not face the consequences? Is it therefore also implicit that the persons who I've spoke of a few minutes ago simply used bad judgment in criticizing when they did, or were somehow not smart about how they went about their activism? It further seems to me to offer faint comfort, the words of verse 8, which I quoted a few minutes ago, wherein the writer opines, ultimately the wickedness of the king will not deliver him from his ultimate fate, death. If one's particularly cynical, one might just add, just like everyone else. So where does this discussion leave us? Following strictly the advice of the writer of this book will likely leave us to live out our lives in relative comfort, leaving us the freedom to eat, drink, and enjoy our lives. Is it all right to simply continue our lives of comfort, interrupted only by our hand-wringing or prayers at the latest newspaper articles or 10 o'clock news? I don't know about you, but this advice leaves a rather empty feeling with me, and a feeling that I owe something to those who are the subjects of injustice. It does also remind me of the famous words of Dr. Martin Niemöller. First they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak out for me. It is my opinion that we all owe those who are being unjustly treated by our society, whether locally, provincially, nationally, or globally, our support and solidarity. For me, solidarity involves more than hope and prayers. It has not to date involved me putting myself in serious harm's way, like the examples of the persons that I mentioned earlier. For me, it has meant choosing a career in which I've had the opportunity to make some moderate difference, giving modest amount of time and financial resources to organizations that I think may make a difference, writing to the local newspaper, and attending the odd public demonstration. For some of us, social action must be direct, and regardless of the personal cost or risk-taking, a stand taken at the proverbial Edmund Pettus Bridge. For others of us, such bold and direct action is not within our contemplation. In my view, it is a worthwhile exercise for each of us to periodically examine and evaluate what we are doing to live our lives in accordance with our values and principles. This exercise is not likely to be entirely comfortable, and I think is likely to lead all of us to the realization that living life according to our values and principles is not without cost, but which will bring us great satisfaction and peace of mind. So may it be, now and always. Claire?
Thanks, Jamie. Your reflections have given us much to consider.